Hey, welcome to Spartan Up Podcast. This is a pretty special episode today. I'm feeling a bit left out. These guys all went down and did the Bataan Death March Memorial. Yeah.
If you want to see video of all the things we're talking about, you can head over to YouTube and just search Spartan Up Podcast or Spartan Up Bataan.
Talk about getting inspired. When we first got there, we listened to true veterans who had gone through it talk about their experience.
Well, we did, which was exceptional. We can talk about it, but let's back up even a little bit further.
Yeah.
Why were we there? How did we find out about it? I mean, I'd heard
great
about
question.
It over the years.
I think someone motivated us.
We did. We met Dan Crowley, and it was one of the previous episodes. I don't know the number, but you can Google Spartan Up Dan Crowley and find it. But he was a Bataan Death March survivor, real Death March survivor. 93, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, somewhere in there. Mind still a steel trap, still physically firm. And he told us of his experience. And we thought when he got done speaking, we were motivated and said, hey, what a great idea. Why don't we go out and in honor of him, why don't we go out and do this Death March Memorial? And so we found ourselves out in White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. I don't know, 6 weeks later or so.
But we thought we were ready. Hang on. I didn't get any information. I met Dan Crowley.
Yeah.
We did the podcast. He was awesome. He certainly motivated us.
Yeah.
But when you came up with the idea that we were going to go do this thing in New Mexico, you could have written a note or something that said, and bring a good backpack, bring proper shoes. I had no idea what we were getting in. Yeah, I thought it was a movie we were going to watch.
Yeah, you know, Joe, you're the boss. You're signing the paychecks. Because of my background, when I say let's go to a road march at 5,000-foot elevation across the desert in New Mexico, there are some implied tasks. One of them is that you ought to have shoes, and Sefer walked for like 6 miles without any. And you ought to probably have You ought to have the backpack on your back to go on a road march.
Yeah,
well,
so
you did it Samsonite.
Johnny, you'll appreciate this because Johnny wasn't there for those watching and listening. I had a laptop backpack.
Okay, so I wasn't there. My loss. Who was?
You were
there.
Well, obviously, the three of us, the very committed three of us, the people here that show up for everything were there. We had Marion, obviously, was there. She was carrying a camera. The funny thing is, she wasn't out of breath. We were all out of breath. She's carrying
and
cameras,
she was running,
gear,
back and
running.
Actually,
back
when I was asking Marion about it, about this thing, and she said, my understanding was I was going to be jumping on and off shuttles, being zipped forward and backward. And
you did most of it with us.
She said, I ended up walking about 18 miles myself.
But she was grateful for it.
She said she was really glad that it did go that way because she was part of it.
Easily.
Yeah, at one point, she said, let me take your bag, Joe. You look like you're feeling a little weak. True story. We had Erica.
Right. So I was going to say, we got the Spartan Up crew.
Yeah.
And then we had like three additional people.
We had your brother.
We had my brother who came along, an Army warrant officer who had just retired days before.
A little bit funnier than Colonel Nye.
He's a good guy. And then we had Erica, a Spartan employee who does many of the endurance events. Frank the Tank Grippy,
retired
command sergeant major, spent most of his career in the Rangers. He was slow, steady, and carrying a lot of weight.
And carrying
a lot at the end. You don't know this, Johnny, but at the end you do a weigh-in. And Colonel and I's brother and I came in 1 pound shy.
Yeah.
We had drank our water. I don't know what the rules are there.
Yeah,
or maybe, we were both a half a pound.
You were close, but there's a standard.
And we missed the standard, and Frank was 5 pounds over.
Oh, yeah, no, Frank's ruck was 50 pounds.
Their rucks were like this big.
Frank was eating gophers along the way.
my ruck was 48, but truth be told, and we'll get into this later, for 14 miles, Sefer carried 20 pounds of that weight on her head.
Joyfully and gratefully. It felt
literally
so good.
I don't know if you know this, but on her head. Barefoot, walking along.
I didn't know it, but I believe it. I'm going to create a new word. This sounds a little snazzy. Situation normal, all Spartaned up.
Yeah, nice.
This is a snazzy.
So then we show up at our Airbnb, which is for three people, and I think we had nine
of us.
So Joe was like sleeping on the floor.
I want to hear more about Erica Walker, though, because I mean,
Erica Walker.
She was there.
Princess of the Ruck.
Yeah, I mean, she was there. And she walked, and you'll hear on the interview, Joe did an interview with her. She goes into some personal depth on her story, kind of on her journey, which was surprising because I didn't know it. Grit, resiliency. She struggled at the tail end of that thing. And there were stops, every 2 miles or so? And she was. She just said to hell with it and kept pushing, knowing that if she stopped, she might stop for
she,
good.
She got so in the zone, you guys don't know this, that the next day when we were we had to leave early, like 5 a.m., she didn't talk to me the whole drive to the airport. She dropped the car off at the car rental, didn't talk to me, got on the plane and left. she was still in the march.
That sounds like me after 2013 death race.
But she sent out a text to all of us, right? At the airport, they asked her if she needed a wheelchair. When you get done with that, I don't care who you are, you're a little stiff.
Well, before we get into the actual event, let's talk about, we listened to a couple of the other survivors the day before. Tim, you know all about the Bataan Death March. We learned a little bit from Dan Crowley, but listening to those survivors made whatever issues we have in our lives seem pretty insignificant.
Well, one of the gentlemen, and I don't remember his name, if somebody does, it could chime in. But his story, he went through so much hardship. He talked about even after the death march was over, after overcoming all of that, being put on a ship going to a prisoner of war camp that was shot by Americans he was worried about, and that the planes coming over for the first time that the American planes are there, but he's in a Japanese ship, and so it's being targeted. So now after surviving all of that, you know, he's going down, and guys died in the ship and the rest of it. I mean, so... it's just amazing.
It was
like
tragic.
Oh, it was. I mean, every
ship they were in. I don't know if you heard it. Right, 1,500 people in the hull. And he was like the size of this room.
Yeah, just crammed in there. Like
that fit 50.
So it sets the scene for a pretty brutal situation. So
it is, and so this death march by far the largest. It gets bigger every year. I think they announced 8,600 or 8,900 participants. I wouldn't say competitors because there's no. There's no first place. You finish or don't finish. So it's a full-on marathon. It's a 5,000-foot elevation change across pretty rugged terrain. Beautiful terrain.
Beautiful
but rugged.
Terrain.
There were times we were very fortunate, I think, that it had snowed the day before.
Packed down
and it
all
was
that
wet,
dust.
And that dust and sand was packed down. We started to feel it on the way back around mile 21 or so. Yeah. It had dried out by then because it was now 75 degrees out. And that sand was starting to kick up, and you're walking at mile 21 in like ankle deep sand up. You're going back uphill now. That started to hurt.
But even setting the stage. So we leave the Airbnb at like 4 a.m. right, and we all pile into that car. And Erica Walker is so motivational. She's like, "I'm just asking you guys to come on a walk with me for 26 miles. You know, like we're all gonna be fine." She blasts Janis Joplin in the car as we're driving there. You're just seeing. It looks like the heartbeat of this event, just all the traffic, everyone's piling into the event.
The red taillights going up through the mountain
passes. Yeah, the red
taillights,
they're going up there. And then we pull in and we go and we line up with all these other racers. And before the sunrise even, it was kind of one of the most moving.
Yeah, but who were we lined up with?
Oh, so we were lined up with OEW.
Which is who and what?
Operation Enduring Warrior. I'll defer to you to explain.
Well, Operation Enduring Warrior, you saw them, is a charity dedicated to wounded warriors, adaptive athletes, guys that are fully kitted out, missing limbs. Some of them are in wheelchairs. And then there's a group of them that will actually wear the full-on pro mask, the gas mask, and they keep it on for the entire march of whatever event they're doing. They're at many of our races. They won't break the seal because it's the anonymity of the unknown soldier. They're representing the warrior, not the individual. So they don't want their faces known. But these guys, so as hard as I thought that course was at times, and I did, and we can talk about that later, to be able to do that in a mask while you're sweating and
in that heat,
and to never take that off.
The flag. You see the size of the flag at
the
start line.
The flag's massive.
And it was like four stories. It was unbelievable, hanging from a crane. I mean, it gives you chills just seeing it.
It's called a post
flag. Maybe it doesn't matter to you because you're into Canadian flags.
No, you've got a beautiful flag. There's no doubt. You do. It's amazing. And then
they sang not only the U.S. national anthem, but the Filipino national anthem as well. Which, you know, is inspirational. I don't know, but I think there was a Filipino army contingent there. I think I heard it. I didn't see it, but I'm pretty sure of it.
And then once we got going, it was fairly easy. We just hiked it and left.
I don't remember to hear about anything. Well, we'll hear how easy it is on the tape.
Yes, and we're going. I'm telling you, when the first time you hear my voice, it's going to be like this. Because I think the first time you started talking to me was like at mile 12.
Just shove the thing.
And
in
it's
your face.
It's like straight uphill, and it was right before.
But
I said,
you were looking good, Colonel. He felt cold as a cucumber.
Colonel Nye was sweating like the Hoover Dam had burst.
Like, right. I should put a desalination water tank.
You ever see the movie Airplane?
Remember
that scene where water is shooting at? That was Colonel Nye.
You look good.
Well, okay. But going up that hill, I would just have preferred that mic was not in my mouth or face at that time.
See, and I was like, what hill?
Later, when you hear me back.
Marion, that's the microphone you had to throw out, right? Because it was waterlogged.
No, but when we're going back downhill, it's a much more conversational tone. But I'm telling you, miles 9 through 13 are uphill and 12 to 13.
See, but it was a hill. It's not like a mountain.
It's 5,000-foot elevation. That's a mountain. That's as mountain as you get.
There's agave.
Zephyr's making a moral out of a mountain.
Yeah. Anyway, right. It was a lot of fun. It really was.
It is.
Let me just backtrack one second, though, to reestablish the scene here.
Yes.
It was fun, and we had a great time. We had a great time doing it, and hopefully we'll do this again or other things like this. But, again, when you go back in history in April of 42 and the thousands of Filipinos and the thousands of Americans who made this trek, which was somewhere around 65 to 70 miles, and the thousands, as many as 5,000 Filipinos killed along around, not dead, but executed randomly, beheaded, stabbed, run over. Americans just lined up, shot, all of them robbed. You know, it's a brutal, brutal event in our American history. So we're there to memorialize it. So we had a great time, but I think it's proper to remember what it's really all about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Agreed.
The Team Spartan is about to take on the Bataan Death March Memorial that started back in the 1980s to remember, you know, those American service members and their Philippine allies, our Philippine brothers and sisters, who were forced marched over 30 miles to a POW camp.
Those who survived faced the atrocities of prisoner of war camps, and thus is the story of Bataan.
Archers! Attention!
Mile 7. There we are. And the sacrifices of soldiers is exactly what we're marching for today. So it is a beautiful day, but it's a day of reverence and respect for all those that have served and gone through some really difficult times.
We are talking about Dan Crowley, gentleman we interviewed on the podcast, who was basically in the thick of it during World War II and when this death march was taking place that we're in right here. This guy shows up for the podcast. I don't know if you know this, Tim. Dan shows up for the podcast. He's 92 in a Mustang, brand new Mustang. Like a cool, you know, somebody in the Fast and the Furious. Gets out, smiling, 42-year-old wife.
Whoa, wait a minute. He's not 42 years older than she is. She's 42?
Yeah, maybe 47. Maybe I'm off by 5 years.
50 years difference?
Yeah, but this guy is so likable. I see it. I think I'd marry him. He was, but I don't know. Any comments on that podcast? Because I was blown away.
No, well, listen, that's, for me, that's one of the more impactful interviews, right? One, it was much longer than most of them, so we got a lot more of the backstory and context.
Sure.
And two, just knowing somewhat of the history of it and kind of what he went through, only really being able to grasp bits and pieces of it. But again, when you're talking about being captured, then having the will, the force of will, nature, to escape and to swim across to another island, get captured again, get put in the Bataan Death March, and survive that, and then come back and still at 90-something, still be a strong mind, strong body, strong spirit. The guy was phenomenal.
But do you think it's the guy, or do you think... Because I saw some resiliency here last night when some of these survivors spoke, and I'm thinking, I wonder if those experiences help build who you are in your 90s.
Well, yeah, I think so, but I think it's commonality, shared purpose, shared hardship. You know, the bonding that took place, we call it the greatest generation. And I think that's probably true. But I think a lot of our young guys are raising their hands now, post 9/11, who know nothing but war, I think they're equal. You know, I saw a story about a Ranger battalion the other day. They're on their 22nd deployment since 9/11.
Wow.
You know, that's 11 years of combat. So never in our history have we ever signed up for that before.
All right, we are here. About, what, 8 or 9 miles in at this point? Got a bunch of weight on our backs, and we're feeling it. What I was thinking was, and I want an opinion from the team here, I was thinking we've got that Spartan science outline on what it takes to achieve any goal. And it starts out with commitment, right? First thing you got to do, well, actually, before commitment.
Public commitment?
Well, before commitment, it's knowing your true north, right? So I think we all know our true north enough, and that's what got us here, right?
Roger that.
And that's what got you where you were in the military, got Tim where he is, got Sephra to do her seed thing, and Erica, I'm not sure what she's doing, but I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that I lost my true north, and I recently found it again in January.
I was going to say, we were talking for those first...
I'm allowed to talk about that. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was a death race, a goji, and now I'm back.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit? About your true north? Hang on.
We can talk about that, right? So it was always Spartan race, and when I found Spartan race, I got my shit together. Am I allowed to swear? Okay, I got my stuff together and worked hard and lost a lot of weight and got really healthy and fit, and that's what I wanted to do and to change lives. And then I started working for Spartan, fast forward, as Joe says, and then it became grueling, and it was a whole different type of suck working for Joe and working for Spartan. It just was. And then... You all of a sudden have 18 jobs and you want to do the best job because it's Joe DeSena, right? True North and all of that stuff. So then start putting in 20-hour days and 50 projects 7 days a week, and you kind of lose yourself and who you are in that, and you become Spartan. And that's what I did. It was like if Spartan had a character last year, I think it was me. Like, but it was in a bad way. And so I started not taking care of myself. I stopped racing. I stopped doing things like this. And then it consumed me and my health. Not taking care of myself, my family, and just becoming obsessed with work. And so at some point, my colleagues were telling me I was drinking too much, gaining too much weight, too obsessed, too consumed with all the wrong things.
At the end of the day, I think people are looking to attach to something positive. I think we all get stuck, like Erica, you were just saying, in our cubicles, yeah, in our cars, in traffic every day. And we're looking for something bigger. Spartan's that bigger thing, right? It's that brand that you can attach to and feel good about and get you healthy, get you reconnected with yourself, get you connected with the environment, get you connected with 6 million other like-minded people. Look, I think the resiliency and the grit and the fortitude that Spartan helps people find inside. I wouldn't say it builds it, it finds it, because we all have it. When we're born, we're all resilient. Babies don't want to die. We don't want to die, right? So we fight.
We have to, though.
We have to.
So it's you have to die, but what are you going to do between, you know?
Yeah, but I'm saying you're going to fight and claw and kick and scream to not go out easily. And so we've got that, but we learn helplessness along the way. So I think Spartan brings that out. And it's awesome because this is where you get to test it, right? You come to a place like this, or you go out and do a beast or an ultra beast, and you get to find out, like, is the stuff I'm doing working? Am I going to be able to fight through those dark moments? Well, the people we're honoring, I mean, that's the most extreme example of resilience. I mean, the stories, I mean, just watch the movie Unbroken. The stories are incredible. And we were joking earlier because I thought we were going to be issued backpacks. And so I got my laptop backpack, and which is really uncomfortable, by the way. It's Samsonite. Everybody else has all these Army-issued beautiful backpacks, waistbands. Anyway, I got this Samsonite laptop backpack, and I got my kettlebell. And the kettlebell doesn't fit in the backpack. But I was thinking, you know, I can't complain. I mean, those guys would have killed to have this backpack back in 1940. So they would have killed for this backpack. And that bag of rice you gave me that I had to dump in the backpack, they would have given a right arm for that bag of rice, right? Yep. So the way I look at it is I'm doing this the hard way, unlike you with that fancy stuff. Now let's hear your story.
So I lost the way, and to your point, I stopped doing Spartan races. I stopped doing the Agogies. I stopped the prescription, right? The prescription that you write to us all. So I fell into a bad place, and my colleagues called me on it, and they went to Joe and were like, hey, one of the toughest beasts that we know is hiding in a cave, and it's not looking good. So they sent me to an awesome place in Seattle where I spent 10 days getting my stuff back together. And now I'm back. And I immediately lost 18 pounds now. And I'm doing a marathon with a backpack today.
You know, when I had heard that Erica was having tough times, I wanted to find the most aggressive therapy known to mankind. And so obviously we could have sent her with a group that would hold hands and talk about issues, or we could have had her do a Spartan race. But I said, is there any place out there that electrocutes people and makes them vomit, no sleep, kind of like Clockwork Orange?
Exactly.
And I
found, wow,
it was the milk room.
And I found a place that does that. And she went for 10 days. And I got to say, nobody was happier than me knowing that she was being tortured like that every day.
It was a struggle. It was hard work every day and meeting new people and seeing things that you just become grateful and realize what's important really quick. And it only takes 10 days to realize I'd rather be working for Joe than be here. So I graduated the program and came back, started training, and I'm back. Like, I really am. Like, ohana, family, all the aloha. Like, this is great. This is great.
So aloha.
And all right.
And you're like the glue that binds all this family together and such a good caretaker of all those people. So when you caretake yourself, then you're caretaking your whole community around you. So good job. We love you.
All right, Spartans. We'll be right back to the episode here in a second, but we're going to take a quick time out, talk about our sponsor, Tiger Balm. Tiger Balm is legendary. It's been around forever, and I don't think it's new to too many people, especially if you're in the athletic world. But I tell you what, this is a product that really, really works, and we are very fortunate that we both just got to use it extensively yesterday, and I am continuing to use it this morning.
Yeah, it was a rather legendary event. You want to tell them what the event was quickly?
The Bataan Death March. The Bataan Memorial.
Right. And so that's 26.2 miles through beautiful landscape and desert. But I'll tell you what, as tough as we may or may not be, afterwards, last night, the house smelled deliciously of menthol and camphor because we all just lathered up our legs. And I have to say, honestly, I was hobbling around a little bit last night. This morning, I truly, truly feel so much better.
And I'm a little older, so I was still hobbling this morning, so I've got another coat on, but I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah, so this stuff is awesome. If you want to find it, go to CVS or Rite Aid. Get new Tiger Balm Active in gel, rub, and convenient spray.
And visit TigerBalm.com to find the store nearest you. Pain happens.
Suffering is optional.
11:50, what mile marker roughly?
Mile 12.
And we are talking the Spartan journey to achieving goals. No matter what goal you set out to achieve, we have looked at it and everybody goes through this same journey. First step in the journey is know your true north. Because if it doesn't align, if the thing you're setting out to do doesn't align with your true north, you're most likely going to fail.
Wait, Joe, can I ask a question now as you talk about it? How can knowing your true north be the first part of your journey? How the heck do you figure out your true north? Most people who aren't healthy
haven't figured out their true north? Well, all right, that's a great question. Some people like to say, what would you do if it was your last day on Earth? Others say, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? I like to say, what would you do if you knew you'd fail anyway? So in other words, you know you're not going to make any money doing this seed thing that you're doing.
Yep.
It's a disaster.
That's for sure.
It's a disaster.
Or the podcast, really.
Or the podcast. We can't make them work, but we're so passionate about them, we do them anyway. Right? I was working on Spartan for 14 years before it was profitable. So I must love it. Got it? So you got to nail your true north. And by the way, it's hard. And your true north changes. Mine was different first, 15 years of my life. Next 15 years, it changes. But you got to make sure that your actions and the things you're going after are aligned with that. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. Mr. Grippy, how'd you find your true north?
I found my true north by just watching my greatest generation parents conducting business and then focusing on my future goals, what I wanted to do. And education, fitness, and the whole all-American dream was part of that. And that's what brought me to the military. And that's what brought me to the death race today. The death march, not the death race. So, when you finally accomplish your goals, you still got to be driving along those same lines of effort looking for new goals. And you got to love yucca.
All right, as we're walking through this landscape, it's super arid and dry, even though it snowed yesterday. So it rained down all the dust, and so it's not that dusty. It's pretty well packed, but the landscape is just covered in California poppy, paddle cactus, barrel cactus, and yucca. Right when I was just up with the Hopis at their bean dance, they use the yucca leaves to tie their sacred corn. The inside of the yucca is the best shampoo you could ever have. Takes away gray hair. Listen to that, right?
What do you mean when you're talking about gray hair? Picking yucca.
I think gray hair is beautiful. We shouldn't, eating cacti. But I think you follow your true north and your passions, and wherever you go, some people say, I don't get what the intersection of Spartan is and plants. And you say, well, you're an endurance race ethnobotanist.
So let's get back to the journey towards achieving goals. So know your true north, right? Nail that. Hard to do. Next step, commit. But commit violently. Commit publicly. Tell your friends you are going to do whatever. You're getting married by the end of the year. You're going to run 100 miles. You're doing the ultra beast. You are going to start a business. Go public with it. Print it in the newspapers. Get it up in neon lights so that you're held accountable by the people around you. Now, what's interesting about commitment is that's the time where you're going to be most excited. It's going to be great, this new business. It's going to be fantastic running 100 miles. Can't wait to get married. The bad news is it's all downhill from that point. And so you got to make sure that you are trained in resiliency.
It can't just be for the thrills and high peaks. But who knows? What do I know about that? Okay? Right,
so now you're committed. You've gone public with it. From here, everything's going to suck. Everything that can go wrong will go wrong. You're going to feel enormous pain, pressure. You're going to doubt yourself. People around you are going to tell you made a mistake. And if you're committed and you're aligned with your true north, only then, and you're resilient, only then will you push through and achieve the goal. Now, here's what's awesome. If you don't quit and you achieve the goal, your brain releases a bunch of chemicals and creates dopamine pathways. And it creates something scientists call future memory. So what that means is the next time you're about to take on a challenge, what happens is your brain gives you a little taste of what it was like when you completed the last challenge. That's why with boxers, they learned to give them some layup fights so that they get a few wins under their belt, get some of those dopamine pathways going, release some of those chemicals in the brain so that when they got up for the big fight, they were more confident, and they got that little taste of winning in their mouth, if that makes sense.
Colonel Nye, how you doing?
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. But we'll get through it.
Is that your resiliency training there, Colonel?
It's just life, right? We signed up for it. We'll give it a go. Let's see how much we got left.
Hoorah. Wait, what are we supposed to say for this race?
Hoorah.
Hoorah.
So I guess the message here is right now at mile 12, it sucks. It's hot. The pack is digging into our backs. Everybody looks like walking zombies. But we are going to get to the finish line, even if we've got to crawl there. Is that true?
Roger that, absolutely.
Roger that, absolutely. 1 o'clock, mile 14. And we are talking all things podcasts. Basically, I don't know how many years we've been doing podcasts, but it seems like at least almost 5 years of podcasts. And now we're at a point where we are literally doing a podcast message every single day. So almost like 350 plus messages that'll rip you off the couch, get you out of bed, and get you going in the morning. You don't need coffee. You just need us.
Yeah, maybe they can. We'd love to hear, like, if you actually did get off the couch, which of those 365 things that we throw at you, like, did it? How can we get others, right?
That's a great call. What is the podcast or the message that got you moving? Let us know. And if you're single, Sephra is looking. All right, what was your favorite podcast? I'm just going through thinking in my mind. I like Dr. Bishi when he said to me, it's not what you eat, because we all chat, oh, if we eat more blueberries, oh, we gotta drink almond milk. He said, it's not what you eat, it's what you don't eat. You know, my mother was pushing healthy foods. I talk about it all the time in the 70s, but I went off the reservation just like everybody else and ate the crappy foods. But when I went back to just eating mostly, you know, salads, veggies, fruits, etc., I stopped snoring. I got better sleep. Everything became better.
Just getting back to steam greens and bone broth just to reset. I mean, Joe, you travel all the time. How does that affect your belly?
Yeah, every time I travel, you know, I've thanks to Dr. Bishi, I don't know what podcast number he is, but we'll post it. Yeah, he said, listen, Joe, when you're flying, don't eat because your body can't digest on a flight. You're crunched up, you're not moving, you're at altitude, you're getting dehydrated, don't eat. And so on most of my flights, I'm just not eating at all. And I'm drinking a ton of water. And even with that, it screws things up.
Well, I've become, you know, those, like, forgive the expression, like country granola people that bring all their own food on the plane. Yep. I've become that person because it's gotten so hard, like while you're traveling, to just take that day and just knock it off, that, I don't know, start being that person that brings a bag of really good stuff to travel with so that you don't have excuses for those in between times.
I'm on almonds today. I've got some really clean salt tablets for the water, and I've got avocado oil. Avocado oil, almonds, and I feel great. And so we actually need less than we think we need. When I was doing crazy long-distance races 10, 12, 15 years ago, we were eating very little, and the less we ate, the better we performed.
So with that in mind, Joe, who inspired you for your fasting concepts that you're doing?
Yeah, so my mother pulled a couple of 30-day fasts.
Really?
Yeah.
On what? Water?
Water. She was...
You ever heard of breatharians? They fast on prana and light in air.
Yeah, well, one of those guys that claimed he never ate, they tracked him and they found him at a Chinese restaurant eating. So that's a true story. So you got to be careful of that. But she pulled 30 days on a fast, and then she did it again, and that started me up on this idea that every month I do 3 days no food.
That's like a vision quest. Do you know about a traditional vision quest?
I do not. Fill me in.
Traditional vision quest. What? There's a great... Colonel Nye, tell us what you know about it. Vision quest.
Vision quest, the movie? with Matthew Modine, all about wrestling, taking down Shoot. Do you remember that? That was the greatest movie ever.
There, and therein lies the great range of our frame of reference amongst people of this podcast. Okay. It's a modern day rite of passage. Okay. You do 4 days of preparation, 4 days of solo, where you're just out there. Some traditions, you just drink water. Okay. And then 4 days or 2 days of reflection.
Sweat lodge?
No, you're just sitting out on the landscape. You're just giving yourself some time to just observe, have protracted and thoughtful observation on the landscape, which around? That's one of the greatest spiritual holidays I've ever been on. Well, it's like you don't have to talk to anyone. You can talk to the ants and hang out and watch the birds.
Well, God bless you that you can take pleasure from that.
It's like pleasure from this. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I am having just a spectacular time here.
All right, yeah. For those of you that are just listening, you can't see this, but I don't know. There's 5,000 plus tough, rugged people out here that are carrying 35 pounds plus on their back, and they're doing basically a marathon through the hills here. Well, Sephra is carrying, if you could envision this, and we'll get a picture, a bag of beans on our head. 20-pound bag of beans on our head because she wants to fit in, but she wants to do it her way.
If you look at traditional cultures all over the world, what are the ladies carrying all those heavy loads of water and fruit and forage, and they're carrying it on their head? Why? Because I have a personal opinion that the human skeleton has more load-bearing capacity, that this is, I'm comfortable right now. I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm cool carrying something on my head, Captain DeSena.
We're just, for those listening in, we are looking out. Oh, God, we probably could see 100 miles downrange. We're seeing mountains to our right. We see snow-covered peaks.
Friends to the left of me, new friends to the right.
It's pretty incredible. We're getting some imagery here that we're going to try to post.
Next podcast, Joe.
Next podcast that really got me going, Tim Ferriss. Everybody loves Tim Ferriss. When he talked about this idea that, hey, build some routines into your life. I like that. You know, a lot of us shoot from the hip. We don't have a plan every day, and then we don't get done what we wanted to get done. And his thing is, lay it out. Get organized the night before, right? Knock off the hard things first thing in the morning while you're fresh. And then the small pebbles, the short-range targets will be easier to hit. I don't know what your thoughts are there, Colonel Nye.
Well, no, I think that's classic military, right? Is that you try to, small victories, you try to build succession, build... you know, victory builds victory, right? Or success builds upon success. And so you knock down a 50-meter target before you can get out to the 500-meter target. Short-range planning prior to long-range planning.
All right, we got another podcast that my wife was a big fan of, Christine Lilly, who was the U.S. Women's National Team. She was awesome to interview. And she talked about team. You know, I think a lot of times, I know certainly with me, you get focused on the individual side. Even when you're out here battling the sun and we're getting a little tired and these backpacks are digging into our back, we just want to get it done. But team is what makes a difference.
You know, whenever you've got a team, it's all about chemistry and character and, you know, pushing each other. And it's also, she talked about the responsibility, right? About the times that you don't want to do something. And, you know, but your teammates kind of pushing you. And then on the next day, it's you pushing them. Everybody's going to have a down days, everybody's got to push through that to have a successful unit.
What were you saying you liked Ian Adamson had said about team, that the team needs to be faster than the slowest member?
Yeah, I mean, that's the same concept, right? Is that, and General McChrystal kind of touched on the same thing, right? When you join any organization, that organization is going to, if it's good, is going to lift you and drive you harder, right? It's a little bit of peer pressure. It is good peer pressure.
I mean, we work for Spartan.
Right. You want to perform at a higher level than what you might do on your own. Because, again, it's the responsibility aspect of it. You know, if you want to hang out with these people and be part of this organization, you have to up your game, right? Yeah. I'll tell you, I always, when I was in, I think about all my friends, I always hung out with guys who were faster, smarter, whatever. Because I always wanted to be the slowest guy, mm-hmm. right? Because I wanted to be pushed to be trying to keep up, kind of like today's event. I want to be the guy trying to keep up with the elites. To me, that's a good way to get there.
How about Travis Roy? Terrible story, right? First hockey game.
I don't like that.
I know, it's a tough one, but hang on. he inspired me. I think he inspires so many people. Yeah, really, I mean, this guy doesn't complain. Nope. Paralyzed, he's literally...
I think that is the best quality a human being can possibly have. Not complaining.
Doesn't complain, right? We go to have him write something. He writes it with his mouth. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, I was unaware of him until the podcast. And then I was, just like everybody else, just blown away because the story, you know, he talks about his first game. And he was a good player, and he had families there, you know, family there to see him and everything else. And hits the board and is paralyzed. And then to be able to kind of just reset his life and just become a motivational speaker, become a motivational person for others. It's an incredible story. I would say for those who haven't heard that interview, they need to do so.
All right, it's 1:15, almost at mile 15, and we're talking Gary Vee. Remember that podcast?
Lots of energy.
Lots of energy. This guy makes me look like I'm standing still, and it's all about the hustle.
Yep. I mean, I don't know. That guy, talk about a presence, right, and a voice.
My issue with Gary, though, is, you can't work. And I probably should be the wrong – I'm probably the wrong person to say this because people would say this about me. But, like, does he really need to work like that? Like, he's got a family now. Like, he's like a maniac.
Wait, that is the most amazing question I've ever heard Joe ask in my life.
But I've always defended Joe on that, Joe. I mean, again, I would do it even if you're not standing here. You take the time to be with your kids, though. Half of the
things, you really do. You absolutely.
The things you do, you're doing with them.
Well, you know who's got the best kids, Colonel Nye. So, Colonel Nye, you got to give me three succinct messages. You know, what are three things to just nail child rearing?
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, his kids are intellectual powerhouses. I'm going to brag for them because they never will.
My children are adults, so let's start there. We're not talking about eight-year-olds. We're talking about, as you're well aware, people your age. One is, and people are going to say, "Oh, in this time and age, this may sound sexist." It isn't, because I'm not talking about that. I think you got to marry well, right? I think.
Seems to be the theme of the march.
No, I think that you need. I think it takes, you know, the expression, it takes a village. What I'm saying is, I think it takes two people. I'm not making a judgment on whether there was a two people or male, female, or anything else. I'm saying children require a lot of interaction. And they require, I think, kind of a yin and yang. But they also require boundaries. They require discipline. And they require expectations. Huh. And I think when children have all of that, they can perform. And I think the other thing is, I think you do your best as a parent to clear things out of their way to allow the path, to allow a clear path for them to become successful. And I'm not talking about, like, paying off a college to get them in, right? I'm talking about making sure that they can focus by taking away the distractions.
Yep.
And I think the more things you can expose them to, the better. And so when, Joe, you travel all over the world with your children, I think that's great because as part of the travel, you're taking in cultures, you're taking experience, and there's an educational component to it. I don't know if that was three, but that's the best I got.
Well, whatever you did, it worked. You wanna talk about Rebecca Gregory? She was at the Boston Marathon when the bomb went off. She lost a leg. What are your thoughts there? I thought that was a fun podcast. It's a wake up call. For those listening, Marion is running alongside us with a tripod and a camera, so you will now see what we see if you're watching. But let's talk Rebecca Gregory. What are you thinking, Tim?
Well, I'm thinking, one, just grace, right? And I'm thinking, you know, of course, resilience. But I think the grace, and I just, you know, from when we saw her in the podcast and her ability to again, carry herself and to have a message and to be inspirational to others.
Yeah.
Now, she could sit there and, again, bemoan the fact that she lost a leg.
So positive.
She, you know, again, just a quirk of fate that she... that her child wasn't hurt, or if I recall, wasn't hurt seriously.
Right.
I mean, she paid the price with her leg shielding the blast. But again, here's a woman that's had multiple operations, everything else, and everything coming off her. Watch behind you, Marion. Everything coming out of her mouth is positivity.
Yeah, right? Really is,
and she's trying.
Positivity.
Right. So, I mean, yeah. I think she's incredible.
Absolutely. And now she's such an inspiration.
Yeah. You know, my, Jack ran the Boston Marathon because of her.
Oh, really?
We were in a Nike store.
Jack, your 13-year-old son.
He was 8. Wow. And we were standing there, and she got up to speak and talk about the Boston bombing.
Thank you.
And we started to dive deeper on what the marathon was all about in a few days. And he said, let's do it. Let's go. So she inspired an 8-year-old to go 26.2 miles.
So that last mile, right? I mean, we walked 24 miles, 24 and a half miles, but it seemed like it was the last mile and a half or so that all the action happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you, my brother, Frank Grippy, were all kind of up front. I was walking stride for stride with you. I stopped to take a picture. You guys got about, 35 yards ahead. I said, oh, I better catch up. And I started to run, and boom, down. But the legs just locked up. I mean, they were not. And you start doing the walk because you can't
bend
your
legs. Then it only gets worse, right?
Yeah. And then you guys were sitting there calmly eating your salt tablets and your oranges and staring at me as I try desperately to waddle my way.
This is dehydration at this point.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I suspected dehydration, but I knew we were going to deal with an ego. Not because it's Colonel Nye, but anybody's ego. When I tell him to go in the medical tent, whether it's Charlie, my son, or Colonel Nye, or myself, right? You're like, I don't need the medical tent. But you went right in.
Well, because I had downed like 2 bottles of Gatorade, ate all your salt tablets. Nothing was working. And it happened to be about 5 feet away. I mean, there was no reason not to. But I was surprised, and I think this is on film. We get in there, ask for an IV, and the doctor says he can't do it. He said, what can you do? Gatorade and stretch. I'm thinking, maybe I don't need to be in here because... Because I'm already doing that.
Yeah.
But as he's stretching, he's asking for my medical history, my background. I'm giving it to him. And he said, and oh, by the way, when are you going to get your hernia fixed? And I said, I don't have a hernia. He said, yes, you do. I said, no, I don't. He said, okay, ignore me. I'm just a doctor telling you what you've got here.
I think he said to you, I've only seen 5,000 of these.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. He said, I'm telling you, you do. But anyway, Marion stayed behind with me. You gallantly or impatiently, or maybe both, said, hey, Tim, we'll see you at the finish line, hopefully knowing I would get there.
No good deed goes unpunished.
No, but you picked up my ruck, right, and wore it in the front like a chest strap kind of thing.
Yeah.
You already had yours on the back, which had to be uncomfortable, that little
It was.
That
it was a nightmare.
Case.
I had my laptop case filled with beans. I had your pack on the front and a kettlebell.
Yeah, and you're waddling around as well. And then even when I came out of the tent, here comes Sephra, Erica, well, you were with me, and we linked up with them, and I thought I was hurting, and I look over at Erica, who was still just focused. I mean, she was moving forward. She wasn't stopping.
She sure was.
And I knew she wasn't stopping, but it was pain on every step to the point of literally...
Almost throwing up.
Dry heaving. Bending over and having to heave, stand up, reset herself, get ready, and keep walking. And it's a combination of the distance... The time, your body, it's 10 hours. So you can be in shape and be ready, like my brother, to run three-hour marathons. But most people don't train at a 10-hour physical exertion limit. I mean, it's just unusual. So, but we all linked up right there before the final. Before all of that, we ran into a good friend along the route. We put in a lot of guys, but Sergeant Major Frank Grippy ran into one of his good buddies.
Command Sergeant Major Phil Slottinger.
Oh, yeah. Phil was great.
He was great.
He had some great words of wisdom.
I'm Command Sergeant Major Phil Slottinger. I'm here supporting the Bataan Death March with the Chapter 9 and Chapter 80 of the Special Forces Association. So what I wanted to share with you, though, is that living is not what we do ourselves, but the influence that we have on other people's lives. Because I would submit to you that all the ribbons and all the medals and stuff that I have on my uniform, you could take them all away. But I have 5 kids, 3 daughters, 2 sons, and to see them succeed in life and take care of my grandkids, erase everything I did, it's so far more important than me. The same thing's true with my service members, because when I see my sailors, airmen, Marines, what, who did I leave out? The sailors? Yeah, and soldiers. When I see them succeed, And when I see them prepare people to follow them, then I know that they lived. It's not by what they do themselves. And the measure, the greatest compliment anybody could ever pay me would be for them to come back 6 months after I left a job and say, you know, what the heck did he do? He's been gone for half a year and the place is running fine. Well, that's a testament to the fact that I prepared people to operate in my absence. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Spartan Up Podcast. We are your grit and resiliency partners. We're pretty much 6 days a week now. We're getting real close to 7 days a week where someone from our team is going to come into your television, into your phone, into your iPad, rip you off the couch, and show you how to be stronger, more resilient, and just attack your day more powerfully.
We motivate people. And if you're not subscribed on YouTube or iTunes, you must be living under a rock. So subscribe immediately. Otherwise, Tim will send a couple of people from
some blackout guys,
operations.
Yeah.
They'll come to your house and bring you to the Baton Death March.
Well, it's important to get those ratings up, right? Because the higher your ratings go, the better chance we get the better guests. The better guests, the better
Yeah, and then
so
the comments.
It's important for them.
Yeah,
right?
Not only that, you get the ratings up, but also comment. We love answering questions.
So, you know, on that note, you're already watching, you're already listening. The idea is you've got friends, family, you want to change their lives. The more you can help us with our mission, the more we can help you with your mission.